check here. Ramona's Plumber. I'm going to talk about responsible plumbing, but really what I'm going to talk about is just the very general issue of water. What is it? Where does it come from? Where does it go? What is the full cycle? A lot of people think it comes out of a pipe and goes down a drain. Well, that's true. But where does it come from in the pipe, and where does it go down the drain, and what is its life cycle? What does it cost? Where does it get dirty? Where does it get clean? I support every human being understanding the process of water, the responsibility of water, the application, the correct application of water, water uses and whatnot. So let me just give you a general thing. Basically, 1% of the water on the earth is available for human consumption. 1%. That's it. Basically, that water gets collected in reservoirs and in the ground, is pumped out of the reservoirs, transmitted through rivers or canals or aqueducts, both open and closed, from state to state, from region to region. Sometimes, like in the case of the western states here, we have the Colorado River, and the Rockies there have a lot of ice that melts. It's not the rain, it's the snow. The rain is flash, boom, in, out, and done. We don't really get a lot of rainwater to drink. Basically, it's snowmelt. The Sierras, Mount Shasta, the water that comes off of that region there and goes out the river in Sacramento, a lot of that is used in California. Most of California's water comes from either there or the Colorado, for example. The different states have different ways of getting water. Some states have no water shortage because they have more rainwater than they need or more ice melt than they need. That doesn't mean that water should be abused there, but I'll stick to the where does water come from and where it goes right now. But it basically comes from the ice melt, and it goes into water treatment plants. It's treated, it's cleaned, it's filtered. They let it go into settling basins sometimes. They do all sorts of things to it, flocculate it and chlorinate it and fluorinate it. And basically, then it's pumped. And it's pumped through water mains in the street. Most of the time, these water mains also are the fire hydrants. In that sense, fire water is the same as drinking water. But once it leaves the street, fire water, fire sprinkler water, and fire hydrant water is not considered drinkable because of the pipes that it sits in and whatnot. The fresh water that comes out of that same system is kept flowing, kept chlorinated, not stagnated, and flows through meters and goes to buildings. Through the buildings from a water meter. Basically, it goes from the meter. The cold water goes to all the cold water fixtures, and the cold water goes to the water heater. That water heater tank heats the water, and it leaves the water heater tank. That same cold water pressure coming into the building is the pressure that pushes the hot water through the tank and to the fixtures. So if you have no cold water inlet to the house, your water heater tank is still full, but the cold water's not there to push it out of the tank to the hot water fixture when you open the hot water faucet. So the cold water pressure is what drives the hot water. The water is usually metered at the street, at the property line, and it's usually metered in cubic feet. There's 748 cubic feet in a household unit, usually, in a water district's billing. And in 100 cubic feet. And water is basically considered wastewater by the authority having jurisdiction once it goes through the water meter. It's considered of unknown quality according to the the water district. That's why the water district does not want water, once it's gone through a meter, going back into the water meter and into the distribution system. That's why backflow preventers are required often. And that requirement is not an unusual one. It's not a ridiculous one. And there will be a point when every water meter in existence has a backflow device on it. The water, once it's into the building, it's stayed pressurized 24/7, 365, unless your water's turned off. And this pressure needs to be kept at a minimum and a maximum. Minimum, I've seen code minimums as low as 15 PSI. I've seen most code maximums to be at 80. I've seen most people require at least 45 PSI, or they can't have a shower, an effective shower. So booster pumps are used by the property owner when the pressure is lower than desired. The water district is not usually required to deliver you water at a usable pressure, either too high or too low. They're only required to deliver you water. The boosting of water, fresh water, is sometimes done, and the decreasing of that water pressure is sometimes done. Both the homeowner's or user's obligation and responsibility, and both equally important. The application of pressure reduction is done with a pressure regulator. The boosting is done with an automatic pump usually. Some people let water elevate, pump up to a, from the city, up to a, like a water tower, and then use gravity pressure down. Others use automatic variable speed booster pumps. Pressure regulation is more, decreasing is more popular and more common. And a good pressure regulator, if every house that had too high a pressure had a good pressure regulator, most plumbing repair businesses would not be in business. High water pressure is the largest, to my experience, the largest cause of plumbing requirements, plumbing repair requirements there is. A good pressure regulator is of the utmost importance. If your water pressure is over 80, it gets very complex when it's over 80 pounds. But once this water is used at a faucet or a shower tub, washing machine, dishwasher, whatever, it then becomes, normally speaking, non-pumped, non-pressurized. It gravity falls through drain pipes in the floor, underneath the house, through a collection system, passively. That means that by gravity it falls through these pipes pitched a quarter inch per foot. And every fixture is like, it's kind of like a series of on-ramps to a freeway. You could look at a tub or a washing machine as an on-ramp, and the freeway being the main drain. All the pipes in the building connect into a building drain, and then they leave the building in one pipe, usually a 3 or 4 inch pipe, and all after it's all collected, it goes out one pipe to the city collection or the sanitary system, the collection system. And those pipes are also vented. The venting system is above the fixture, and the drain system is below the fixture. This is referred to in plumbing as typical waste and vent, drain, waste, and vent, DWV. Drain below the P-trap of the fixture and waste, and vent above the P-trap of the fixture. And all these horizontal P-traps that go into the wall, the trap arms, right there at the P-trap, that's considered the fixture. Once it goes downward from the P-trap, it's a drain. But right there at that same point, once it goes upward, it's the vent. The vents are always dry. The vents go through the roof, and it's kind of like if you stick a straw in your Coke at the fast food store. I'll say McDonald's. And I was biting my tongue. And you put your thumb on the straw and bring the straw out of the cup. There's still water in, or Coke in the straw. You pull your thumb off the straw, the Coke falls out. Lots of annoying little boys do this to their little brothers. It was done to me. Maybe that's what's wrong. But anyway, the venting, the pulling the thumb off the straw is extremely important, not to be underestimated. That vent is what the central sanitary system uses for the collection system. Out your roof is what the sanitation system uses to vent their system through your roof, and through your roof so that you don't end up catching sewer gases into your windows or out of your drains. And the reason drains don't stink is they have P-traps. And that, to my education, is the sole purpose of a P-trap. That little J-bend under a sink or a tub or a shower. The sole purpose of that is to trap the sewer gases, which once the drain water gets down into that drain pipe, funny things happen. So that's wastewater, and the P-trap keeps it traps the gases in, and the vents let the water go down, and the pumps and or pressure from the distribution system push it to you. And once it gets into that collection system for the sewer district, it goes down a collection of pipes and is sometimes lifted to a higher level, and then it's allowed to fall back down. Sometimes it's all gravity flow down to the sewer treatment plant. But sewer treatment plants typically, there's a large process there. I won't go into the details of that, but they typically, like in San Diego, California here, we process it once or twice, and then we push it down a pipe 2 miles out into the ocean off the shelf, and bada boom, into the ocean. It's a couple miles out, and we consider that appropriate. The waste issues of contaminants and different storm drains from the ground area getting into that sanitation sewer is an issue of separation, and there are storm water runoffs that need to be kept separate from the sanitation or soil waste collection by the sewer district. And these are the little things that most people don't really think about, but rainwater runoff, stormwater, watershed districts that goes out to the into the rivers and into the lakes and out to the ocean, those are one type of waste. Sanitary waste is another type. It's processed before it's put into the ocean. And a lot of houses have septic tanks and leach fields out of those septic tanks. But that leach field water eventually makes its way into the groundwater and out into the Colorado River and to the ocean somehow, or over to someone's private well. Incidentally, it's as little as 100 and 200 feet mandated distance between someone's leach field and someone's well. Once water leaches out of a leach field system into the groundwater and migrates downhill into a reservoir, a river, the water table, whatnot, it can get picked up by a private well. It doesn't have to. If it does, I can use the word toilet to tap and alarm everybody. The prevention of toilet to tap is a couple hundred feet of dirt. And if that pleases you, great. And if it doesn't, get irate and scream, "Oh no, toilet to tap, reuse water," like everybody does when they talk about processing water correctly and sending it back into the water distribution system for drinking. If an article comes out, by the way, in the paper and talks about doing that, everybody says no. And in rural areas, that's what they've been doing for a long time anyway, but just don't know it. So anyway, moving on from that micro system there to the more macro of the groundwater, which flows into the estuaries or rivers or reservoirs, when it gets there from people's septic tanks and leach fields, it just so happens that whatever is down the toilet in these rural buildings ends up in these reservoirs. Now, I might cite some local hysteria, which is real. I don't know if the hysteria is real, but the issues are real, of Viagra and sex hormones and everything being in the water, potable water district across the country, coast to coast. The reason it's not too much discussed is No one has a solution, really. And it's parts per billion with a B, not parts per million. And we generally concern ourselves with parts per million. So those who are concerned with parts per billion, back to the hysteria. But all this stuff that people flush down the toilet, medicines or Drano or expired bottles of you name it, out of sight, out of mind does not exist. This world is round. It's small, and days are numbered before a very tangible effect from the contamination of the limits of contamination of the wastewater and freshwater systems merging. I believe the time is just about getting ready to crowd here. But that's the macro of wastewater. And one might wonder how water could get from someone's toilet in Colorado or Utah or Arizona into someone's faucet in California in some high-class neighborhood. It's simply because we get our drinking water from the Colorado River. We process it minimally. We don't test it for product number 6,242 because we have no reason to suspect that it's there. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to deal with it. We don't even have a test for that. So, and besides, it's in parts per billion. So, the reality of that is very real. The relevance of these contaminants in health are debated. None of it's fantasy. So when it comes to the big picture, we have the micro and the macro and the whole big picture of what I consider to be a very realistic statement that every human is entitled to water and air. To deprive a human of water or air would be, well, something some other country does. Certainly not America. But in reality, by our actions, we are starting to deny clean water to some, or usable water, or water usable for drinking on some level to some people. There are ranches in the San Diego area, I won't mention the names, that have pumped water to the point of 100 surrounding houses, wells going dry, and there not being a water meter available, water district available, city water available, piped water available, the well being the only water available. When that groundwater was pumped dry, those real estate places, those houses, those ranches, they not only couldn't live there without trucking in water, but they had to pay for the trucking in water of the water, and they couldn't even sell their property because banks will not lend on real estate without water. So wells go dry. Most people don't want to think about that, except for the people whose wells gone dry. As a plumber, I have gotten many a phone call. Wells going dry is not a matter of you know, green this or that. I'm going to try to stay away from the G word there. I'm a very responsible plumber and love the environment, but I don't want to jump on a green bandwagon because it just alienates some and overstimulates others. But we do need to be more responsible with how we use our water, waste our water, and allow our water to be lost in transmission. And we have to be careful with how we go about being political on this issue, because politicians like to sell things that are in their best interest, and is going to become a lot of issues come up to the ballots in the years to come. And I think people need to know the facts, not the hysteria or the allegations or the half-truths. There's a lot of half-truths that I could say for an hour and make all sorts of pictures the obvious result, which would be false. And then I could tell the rest of the story and tell a different outcome. But I ask everyone to search the facts for themselves. But this has been a simple overview, a very general talk on the cycle of water. And my closing thought is water has about a 100-year life cycle. That means that today, if you're going to look at it a certain way, every water we drink today has been through someone's toilet 100 years ago, in the very early toilets. Water goes from one level all the way in a full circle back to that same point in which it originated, they say, according to the American Water Works Association, which is this country's and the most prominent water authority in the world. So anyway, life cycle of 100 years. That's the way that ball turns. So anyway, this concludes water cycling, wastewater, responsible plumbing. And if you have a question, if you have a project you want to do regarding wastewater or freshwater treatment or wastewater treatment, go ahead, email me, and look into the facts, get them yourself. Ramonas Plumber, signing out of my responsible plumbing issues. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.